Welcome, campers, to Camp Divination. We are your hosts. I'm Ryan.
And I'm Jordan.
Whoa.
And I'm Carly.
Jordan's actually here for once.
I am. I'm back.
I'm just as surprised as all of you listening right now.
Yeah.
So enjoy this loveliness in your ear holes for a moment.
That's right. This is only the second Camp Divination I've done. I believe.
Out of how many have we done this point? Four.
I think
five.
It's four, right?
Something like that. I don't know. Doesn't matter. It feels like you've not been here for 90% of it.
I missed two in a row for sure.
Yeah. We had actually discussed the last episode.
Yeah.
You didn't make it this one. We're gonna cut ties.
Why do you think I'm here?
You gotta redeem yourself some way.
Yeah. Threat of being fired. That's the only reason I showed up.
Isn't that why we all show up?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
no, I was actually super bummed because Dyatlov Pass
you being there for that one.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
One fucking stumped me. Like, I'm
it
still
was, it was tough.
I'm still low-key salty about it. Like, first of all, no cards. No, not with you. Just that I didn't understand the cards.
Well, yeah. Carly also proposed the idea afterward of doing it as like a series, because we could literally evolve that so much. And like, I feel like where we had left off with Dyatlov, like, we were on the path to like something. We had something going for sure.
Yeah.
So I would love to return to that one.
So everyone who listens to podcasts has had the experience where you're listening and you're like screaming something at your phone, you know, like,
yeah, I remember hearing about this one.
Well, they're like, it's even more frustrating when you are actually supposed to be on that podcast and then you're listening to it and you're like, no, this, go this way.
Well, that was in regards to the Bigfoot thing, right?
Yep.
Because
about infrasound with Bigfoot encounters.
Yeah.
We are going to do a second Dyatlov Pass.
Oh, I really hope we do, because we'll literally continue right where we left off with the last one.
Yep.
And I mean, because there's so much more. I think there's more that we can really pull.
Yeah. I mean, we could do a full second episode and then a second Camp Divination, or we could just do a second, continue the Camp Divination and throw it up on Patreon.
Yeah.
You know?
That'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, bitches.
Yeah.
But you know,
threatened your audience.
You know, you call them bitches, but also it's kind of on us for being not so great at Patreon lately. And we do appreciate those who've stuck behind us. Just your support literally helps tremendously.
Awesome.
We've got a lot of monthly upkeep now, especially since we've added a new show. We're having to, you know, pay out for multiple shows now per month, like our hosting, everything else, mastering, like it's starting to add up at this point. And we haven't added ads. So, you know, like,
yeah, the only money we're making is from the Patreon. So.
Exactly. And so appreciate everyone that stuck through, even though we've been very silent. There's been a massive lull in activity on our Patreon. But again, very much thank you. This isn't a Patreon show. This isn't Dyatlov Pass. We're not talking about any of that tonight, but we have plans. We have ideas. Just stick it out with us.
For sure. So tonight, what we are talking about is the disappearance of Stephen Kocher.
That's correct.
Why don't you give the campers a little summary?
Yeah. So for those of you that missed the episode, or you're just trying to catch up right now, this week we're covering the case of Stephen Kocher. That happened in 2009. A man from Utah had driven to Las Vegas, Nevada, specifically Henderson, left his car about noon and disappeared to never be seen again. The whole thing, I mean, there's a lot more to it, obviously. I mean, he had been back and forth. Nobody knew really why he was there. Some people thought he was there for a job interview. Other people thought he was on his way to visit family. But we have security footage that shows him literally exiting and leaving his car, walking across the road at 12 o'clock on December I can't remember the exact date right now, but listen to the episode. It is in 2009, December of 2009, and literally disappears, never to be seen again. And there's a lot of a lot that was done with the investigation, a lot of just random randomness to it. And there were 3 pinged cell phone calls with GPS locations, all kind of very random, but not very far from where he was last seen. And then after that, everything went cold. And so here, we hope to maybe uncover a little bit, see if we can figure out maybe, if we're on the right track of a possible idea, because Jordan and I had kind of brainstormed a little bit on what we thought maybe could have happened. And so maybe we'll see if there's any truth to our, possible ideas here, or if we literally have no idea what we're talking about. Either way, we're here for more answers.
It's a mystery regardless. So I am going to step in here and say I have yet to do an active missing persons case. So just as a disclaimer for anybody listening, this should be considered for entertainment purposes only. I cannot guarantee my accuracy. I believe in my abilities, but this is kind of a fresh territory for me. So with that, let's get into it.
Awesome. I think that makes it even more exciting.
I am pretty excited. I'm not going to lie.
Stepping into uncharted territory here.
Yeah, and if I am right about anything, I'm going to brag from the rooftops like Peter Pan crowing into the sky, even though I literally just said, don't listen to me.
Awesome. So I kind of want to want to know why he was ultimately there. Was he there, in fact, for a job interview, or was it something else?
Because there's a lot of suspicion that he had sort of gotten mixed up in some nefarious activities, and maybe that's what he was doing in the area.
Yeah.
It would be nice to know if was he there for, for a good reason, or for, something unseemly.
There's so many questions I have about this one. It's gonna be tough.
We're gonna get very specific with the questions too. I think that's one big difference between the like 4TN stuff and the true crime stuff, is the true crime is gonna draw a lot more specific questions.
Okay, so the cards we have judgment right off the bat. The judgment, visible woman, and father. And my dog groaning in the background. I don't know if y'all heard that or not. But if there's a mysterious disembodied groan, it's not a ghost. It's in fact Gunner.
How dare you have noisy dogs in the background?
I know. It was it's the loudest he's been whilst podcasting. So judgment is usually an accounting for your actions, right? Right or wrong, you have to face the music. But then we have the visible woman, which is also the Queen of Wands, which is, this would be a female energy, but this would be a woman who knows what she wants and she's not afraid to go after it. But then we have the Father card, which is also the Emperor, which is a very masculine energy. And I don't know what those are doing here, because you asked what he's there for. Why was he there? I pulled extra cards, and we have the Heart, which indicates love, of romantic, platonic, it doesn't matter, where it's indicating love. But then we have Ghost, dead people things. And then the Snail, which is usually, I think of the Snail as like making home wherever you are, or like moving at a steady pace, but Snails travels with its little house on its back. And then the Crown, which is the winner, the big payoff. So what I'm going to say is, was there a woman involved? ? I'm asking both of you.
So it was actually on one of his previous travels, because he went back and forth a couple of times before he made his final trip. And one of the times he went, he actually went to his ex-girlfriend's house.
Okay.
And she wasn't there, but he ended up having lunch with her family. And they asked him, like, what are you doing? And he was like, oh, I'm going to visit family in Sacramento, which wasn't true.
Okay, so I would say family ties, for sure. The woman, some sense of homecoming. But I need you guys to ask more questions to get some more clarity on that. But okay. Like that is a definite theme that's happening there. Woman attraction, romance.
So could go ahead.
I did want to ask you a question, not for the cards, but for you, because Ryan and I found it extremely bizarre that he went to visit his ex-girlfriend who was not home and decided to stay and have lunch with her parents.
And is that weird to you?
I mean, yeah, but like you also have to understand that like I talk to like 5 people in real life. Like I'm not a super friendly person.
Here's the thing though. Stephen Kocher was a true blue good Mormon boy.
Okay, so in that case, no, that's not weird to me. As an ex-Mormon, so like me personally, would I do that? No. But if they were tight-knit, if they were friends, and you also have to understand that Mormons in general, if someone like that showed up at my doorstep, I would feel obligated to like let them in and feed them lunch, even though I'm like, that's weird. You're my daughter's ex-boyfriend, but like I know you. We go to church together. All right, come on in. Like it is a part of Mormon culture, so it's not that weird to me.
Okay. I don't know. To me, it just seems weird. But I've also had exes that have been friends with my family and done things with my family after the fact. So,
yeah. Was he close with the family? Like when they were together, was he close?
There was never anything they really said. I think I think there was even something that was like off-putting for her family for him to just like want to stick around and have lunch with them.
Yeah.
In her absence.
Yeah. It is pretty weird, but I could honestly see it happening. Like it wouldn't be that shocking to me. Mormons are bred to be overly polite. Like we don't really say no. And we're also taught to extend kindness, like even in the face of like, you hurt my daughter, potentially. Like you hurt my daughter, you broke up with my daughter. Why are you here?
Yeah.
A large percentage of Mormons would immediately go, all right, that's fine. Come on in. Let's eat. How are you doing? How is your family? Are you seeing anyone now? Like, they're trained to put their discomfort aside for the comfort of another person.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes sense. Yeah.
That sounded like a very Mormon thing to me when I first heard it.
It is. Yeah.
So let's shed some more light on this case. So it turned out, I mean, Stephen, he had lost his job. He was basically handing out flyers for a window washing business. It also came about that we were able to find out he was $1,500 behind on his rent.
Ooh, snap.
Over 3 months, so three payments. His landlord had worked out a deal with him, supposedly. Like, he knew he was good for it, and, you know, he was going to give him time. But then there ended up being some, like, weird altercation between Steven's roommate Jordan and the landlord that like accused him of stealing from him, accused Jordan of stealing from the landlord. So we didn't really know exactly what that was. Maybe if it was in ties to like Steven was $1,500 behind, like maybe that was in total with both of them. Maybe neither one were paying anything. So this is where we started to feel like the landlord became involved. Do we want to like get into that right now, or do we want to ask anything else leading up to that?
We can for sure just get into that. Like, okay. I'm really curious, because that landlord was super sketchy.
The landlord has been my biggest like
suspect.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And then him, and then Mark DM. Oh my gosh, DiMaggio.
Yeah. Mark DiMaggio.
Which we'll talk about him here in a minute.
Yeah, but we'll get there as well.
I want to know if, like, there was more to this thing. Was this landlord, had he been more, because there was also another thing where he had actually reached out to Steven's dad asking about the money. So we know, like, he wasn't just all fine with him not paying, whatever. So, like, was there more involvement within this landlord, like, started to develop or started to, like, get into?
Okay, so was there more involvement with the landlord? We have philandering man, the moon, which is seeing through deceptions, and the ace of wands, the spark of inspiration. So, hang on. I'm going to use 2 decks, probably, for most of this. We have offerings. That seems to be money related to me. Crow's foot, that's a talisman. I'd say that these cards are like sketchy enough that I would say maybe, but if I was to say for sure, we'd have to go a little bit deeper because okay. The philandering man is usually, he's got an agenda, right? Like if this isn't like a woman he's cheating on, he definitely has an agenda. The moon is seeing through deceptions. The ace of wand is the spark of potential. So potentially the landlord could have seen or like had some sort of idea that he thought would lead to him getting this money that he was owed, right?
Right.
The other cards are offerings, the crow's foot. It almost seems like he was trying to like cover his own ass, and like the mort bell is a call to worship or to change the energy, but I also wonder if it's like ringing the alarm bell in a different direction, so like it's not looked at towards him. And the last card is just the man card, so like to me that would kind of indicate some level of involvement. Mm-hmm. But based on these cards alone, or like maybe not involvement, or it could be awareness, I'm not super confident, but I would say based on these alone, it's worth diving into a little bit deeper.
Okay. All right. So I think we'll dive a little bit deeper, maybe move on to
Mark.
The address. Yeah, so the address that he supposedly had walked up to is like which ended up belonging to the DiMaggio's. And that same day that he was there, there was a reported moving truck moving out all their belongings. The police went over there over the course of like 2 months trying to get somebody to answer the door. It was obviously vacant. No answer. There were random cars in and out of the driveway during that time. So I guess my first question is, because this is going to be a loaded question. So did the DiMaggio's as a whole have something to do with Steven's disappearance?
Okay. Is this a mob family?
Well, no, I mean, they went, like, it was weird, though, because they went from, like, this three-bedroom, two-bath, like, 3,000-square-foot home to literally, like, a small one-bedroom condo. But it was also reported that they had no idea anything about it. They were, like, they said they had no clue, but then eventually said, oh, but their son lives in the back house.
Okay.
So I'm curious if they...
Their son is just as sketchy as the landlord, if not more.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so the cards that I have here are the hair, which means to hide in the harebells. So something hidden, like purposely hiding oneself away. The mandrake root, which is the root of the issue. The clover, which is usually a good luck card, but in this case, I'm looking at it as a yes card. The Hand of Glory, which is trickery or deceit. I like to call it sneaky fuckery because that's fun for me. and then the Nest, which the meanings for the Nest card, it is a comfortable home. It's like a little landing place, but it also means to protect something. Okay. But I'm not exactly sure what that would be. So, yeah, you guys...
Do you think that could potentially be them trying to protect their son because they knew the son was involved in something, maybe, at least?
I think it's a possibility based on those cards. Yeah, I would say, because to hide in the harebells, there's enough there to indicate some sort of deception going on.
Mm-hmm.
But... I don't know what.
Yeah. I think just the fact that it took like 6 weeks for the police to hear back from them is super sketchy.
Right.
I mean, you'd think you'd want to go like immediately. Like, I am not here to judge, although I actively am.
Then it wasn't so long. It was like 2 weeks or a week or whatever. The sun wasn't until this was December... In the middle of December, like December 12th or something, and the son didn't get in contact with him until like February 18th.
Yeah.
After they had been requesting him reach out and left numerous like business cards and told the parents to let him know, like...
That's sketchy from all of them. Like, as I have no skin in this game other than I like true crime, but like if you are if you don't have anything to hide, why are you dodging the police? Right. And why are your parents like, okay, we'll tell him. Listen, if the police showed up at my door and was like, hey, we need to talk to your kid, I'd fucking drag them into the police station and be like, we're going to solve this right now. You're guilty or you're not guilty, but I'm not dealing with this shit. Face it.
Yeah.
Sorry, exactly. Spawns. Don't commit crime.
Yeah, precisely. I don't know. The son seems super. I mean, he has a rap sheet like a mile long.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, he's been in all kinds of shit, like car theft, drug dealing.
He was shit, known to flee, like to run from. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, it turns out he had 4 properties. One of which, one of the neighbors of the property, and this is like an area away from this area. But it turns out that one of the neighbors of the property had actually claimed, when shown a picture of Steven, had said that she had seen him in one of those properties.
Mm. So sneaky fuckery galore is what I'm picking up from this. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to do like a pile for the landlord and a pile for this other guy?
Absolutely.
What was his name again? Sorry.
The landlord's name, just so we have names of both here. The landlord's name was Brett Bishop. And then the son of the DiMaggio family, where we had seen like their security footage, a reflection off of a car that shows Steven walking up to this house at 2260 Evening Lights. I think it was Evening Light Street. The son of that family was Mark DiMaggio.
Okay, so between the two of these piles, I would lean towards Mark, only because the landlord's pile, we have the mortar and pestle, which is creating something new, or practicality.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it is a tool. The urn is interesting because that usually means eternal remembrance. And then the pipe is agreements and contracts. So it seems to me like the landlord is mostly just focused on getting his money by whatever means necessary. But the DiMaggio spawn, we have the mining pick, which is to uncover something. The pillar is to lift something up, and chiromancy, which is, I usually just call it a card of fate. Like, it's like a poem that you read. So yeah, it's kind of, so between the two of those, that is where I would tend to lean.
More Mark than Brett?
Yeah, I mean, if it was the landlord, it would definitely be money related and not personal.
There is some more information we uncovered about Brett. Brett Bishop, okay. The landlord. He actually had a pretty serious history of, like, criminal history as well.
So that's fun. Hey, criminals, don't come find me.
So, at some point, his garage was raided.
Okay.
And they found a mass amount of guns and silencers and even a homemade silencer, which is...
Well, how fun for
big,
him.
Big, big no-no.
That's big Brett energy.
Yeah, it is.
They also found, they found marijuana, which that's not a big deal. Whatever. We don't care.
Right.
But they also, Brett was reported to be working, because this is like before his landlord days, if I'm not mistaken in our timeline.
Yeah.
He was reported for working for a closed door pharmacy, where he, even though he had no type of pharmaceutical credentials, he was the one delivering these medications to hospitals and other areas. And then when they would go out of, they would expire or whatever, he would pick them up. So his garage was found with a lot of pills.
Yeah.
Mainly muscle relaxers, of course, and pain pills, all narcotics, like, you know, and then he also was found with $100,000 stolen Porsche.
Of course he did. Of course, Brett.
So, who doesn't have one of those, though, really?
I have one of those in my backyard right now. What are you talking about? I don't drive a fucking minivan.
Is it stolen, too?
Definitely. Oh, I stole it for myself. Yeah. I feel stolen. How about that?
So, so we have this bit of information.
Okay.
And he's just not a great guy.
Well, that tracks for
the history of violence and everything, too.
First of all, can we just talk about the audacity? Brett's and Chad's apparently have the exact same energy. Just the audacity to roll up and be like, guess what? This is my job. No qualifications. You can suck it. And people just fucking buy it? Like, what could I do in my life if I had that kind of energy? I'm about to bring out my backwards baseball hat and be a Chad again. I can't even with this. Brett, I hope you listen to this. I'm offended. If Brett was involved, it would have been money related. Like, that would have been his motive. And
awesome.
Whatever. DiMaggio Mark. Spawn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to keep calling DiMaggio Spawn, probably. Mark.
Okay.
That one felt more personal. If I was cold reading the two piles. So, I mean, technically, it still could go either way.
Yeah.
But I don't, like, if this was, like, a money-motivated crime, like, what would be the purpose of killing him? Because he wouldn't get his money.
Right.
Like, unless his dad was going to pay up, but I don't know why his dad would pay up if his son's still missing.
Right. And you never know. They were all Mormons. So.
Wait, all of them? Everybody here is Mormon? Well, even the DiMaggio's?
I don't know about the DiMaggio's. No,
Stephen and his family were.
Yeah.
Gasp. Yeah. Well, I know Stephen and his family were. Well, yeah. So, okay. Like, Mormons are, like, for the most part, like, of course, there's going to be a bad apple everywhere, but Mormons are generally, like, bred and trained to be overly generous. So, like, if somebody is in need, you're going to fork over that money, even if it might put you in a tight position because you could be helping somebody else. Right. You know?
Yeah.
So.
I mean, does that extend outside of their community generally? Like, I know the Mormon communities are fairly insular.
It can. So. It kind of depends. Like, it depends on the situation, but like.
Sure.
Yeah, and if this was like money oriented and it was like, hey, pay me money and I'll tell you where your son's body is, then I also feel like they probably would have gone to the police with it. Like, not all. This isn't a blanket statement for all Mormons. I'm only speaking for the ones that I have direct experience with.
Just pretty straight-laced approaches to everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, if they weren't, like, gray area Mormons, or they're not, like, the shady con artists that also, unfortunately, infiltrate Mormonism, but, like, the vast general members are just, like, pretty decent people that have been trained to be as nice as fucking possible. Okay? So, like... Yeah. Yeah, like, it could be that Steve was in a financial bind enough times that his parents were like, we have to cut you off. But, like, I know people personally who have, like, stolen money from their parents and all sorts of things. And they were like, it's fine. Come on. Come home. Come live with me. You know,
well, like, right before this, which I didn't mention in the story or discussion, Steven's mom gave him $500, put it into one of his accounts.
Okay, see, so they still are trying to support Steven.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't pay the landlord, other than they just, A, they might not have had the money, or B, maybe, I don't know. But, so the landlord would be money motivated, and DiMaggio's Spawn, Mark, would be more personal. That's my take on the cards. Okay.
I have a fairly big question to ask, which is...
Okay.
I mean, I want to know if he's still alive or not.
I don't think so, because the ghost card already came out, but I'll ask again. No, because the ghost was in... I think that was my first card pull. The ghost card came out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll ask.
Okay.
I mean, because let's not ignore the fact that he could have just left.
He could have.
I mean, I know it seems unlikely because he left his car and all that, but people have done crazier things to escape you know, their families or a religion or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he ditched his car outside Vegas. So he could have gone any number of places from Vegas.
He could have. So the cards that I have right now, I have the Staying, which is to go a little deeper or a direction of your energy. But then we have, so I think this is just giving like a general feel of what the Stephen may have been feeling. So then we have the Whip, which would be, I hate to use the term feeling persecuted, but since we're talking about Mormons here, I'm going to use the term feeling persecuted because, unfortunately, a side effect of Mormonism is feeling like the world is out to get you because you are taught from a very early age that other people will not understand you and will persecute you for your beliefs. Yeah. So
that's like one of the main tenets of the religion.
Yeah, it is. So a lot of Mormons and a lot of Mormon men, especially if things are going wrong in their life, they have an inability to deal with it and they will feel like they are being targeted. Right or wrong, it doesn't have to make any sense. This is like, it's a very common theme within Mormonism, the dark side of Mormonism. But then we have the Crossroads card. So it seems like he was trying to make a decision. We have the Witch's Bottle. So that would say to me that he was feeling very trapped. The Bear would mean a period of slight isolation. So he could have like, it's usually isolation or regeneration, like withdrawing, almost like the Hermit card. Which to me would say that there is the possibility that maybe he did intend on like running away from his problems. But then we have the Moth, which is the messenger for the dead, and the Pillar, which is a lifting up. So I still would side on dead, but I'm going to ask this other, I'm going to ask my other deck real quick, just because I feel like I'm fairly confident in that. But since this is a new venture for me, let's just
ask. You feel like Steve might just be up in Mormon heaven?
Yeah. With all his wives.
Yeah.
That still exists in Mormon heaven.
I mean, the Bear card makes a lot of sense to me because in the time leading up to his disappearance, he was spending a lot of time isolated by going on these really long drives that no one could really explain.
Right.
Yeah. He would just take off, and one day he did like 1,100 miles where he just was driving like into other states. He would drive into Nevada. He was in California for a little, but really doing anything.
Right.
Just, he would just drive and then drive home.
Okay. So I do have more cards. I also have another thought as as a Mormon, as an ex-Mormon, is it possible that he was going on religious sojourns, like long walks by himself to commune with God or like to prove, yeah, you know, like, what was it? Moses? Clearly, it's been a while since I've read any scripture. But no, but you hear a lot of those stories about men who will isolate themselves and go on these spiritual, or I guess fucking Jesus did it too, but like, you
yeah,
know.
Yeah, like a spirit quest.
Yeah. So the cards here are, we have Sister, which is also the Page of Pentacles. The Indigenous Man, which is also the King of Pentacles. So both of those are very money-oriented cards. Page of Pentacles, King of Pentacles, the entire suit of Pentacles usually can easily have some ties to money. But then we have Poison, and then we have Mexico, which is the Ten of Pentacles. So again, pentacle with poison in the middle. And the poison card is also the Seven of Cups. So that would seem to me like, A, he had a lot on his mind. B, we're pulling back in the female energy. So I wonder if he still is hoping to like reconnect with this ex-girlfriend that he went to see. The poison card, again, the poison and Mexico could go either way, right? Like, I still low-key think dead, but
yeah,
I guess there is the possibility that he could have just, like, fucked off to Mexico. But with the, if it's not literal poison, I'll just fucking ask if it's dead or not dead.
Mexico historically has been a pretty popular escape route for Mormons.
Yeah, yeah, there was the whole polygamy. So like that could be like a legitimate thing, but there's also no saying that he survived.
Sure, the trip quest.
So it does seem to me like he was feeling very conflicted, going over his options, thinking about this female energy, whoever she may be. I don't think it was an actual sister, just for the record. I'm going off of the woman on there. But with the Seven of Cups and poison, to me, that would mean a very troubled mind, unable to decide which route to take. So if he did flee to Mexico, did he survive?
I don't think he's alive.
I don't think he is.
You don't think so?
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Okay, so we do have the trunk, which is starting a new life. The crystal ball, which is seeing spirits, so again, dead people things. Yeah. The grave and ghost. Shit. So dead.
Okay. Okay. Can't get much clearer than that.
I will officially say, officially, unofficially, because once again, please use this for entertainment purposes only. Officially, unofficially say he's fucking dead. Sorry if any family members hear this.
All right, then I want to know, was Mark DiMaggio and Brett Bishop in cahoots? So this is the theory Jordan and I started to develop, was that because Stephen owed so much money, he's pretty deep with the crime, and so obviously is Mark DiMaggio. So they, thinking maybe they knew each other either through business or some deep like crime, whatever, and so he basically hires Mark DiMaggio to either take him out or, whatever.
To try to rob him or something.
So we think that, like, he tells Steven, well, if you do this, like, go or deliver this package. Because Steven's seen also carrying, like, a folder. Which is why a lot of people think he's, he is, in fact, on his way to a job interview in the middle of a cul-de-sac, I guess. So they think, like, we think maybe... Brett was like, deliver this. Once it's delivered, we'll consider your debts paid.
We'll call it even.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so, thinking maybe they were in cahoots together and this was actually, they ended up taking him out or something happened there, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay. My theme for the show is yes and, apparently. Okay, so the cards that I have, we have the ladder, which is ascension. That's a step up from where you are. So technically, that could be a yes. We have an actual yes card here for being in cahoots. But we have the ladder, the drum, which is to move heaven and earth, the dog, which is loyalty, or in this case, like a dog with a bone, unable to let something go. The cure, which is the yes card. And then the mining pick, which is to, again, uncover something. That's come up one other time in this reading here. But here is the yes and part, okay? Because I asked my other deck the same question, are the landlord and DiMaggio spawn in cahoots, right? And I got indigenous woman, rational woman, the devil, and true friend. So once again... There is a woman involved in whatever is happening here. The woman is very important to this story.
Maybe the woman is the mom that he didn't want to let down. So he's going to all ends of the earth to make sure he gets this money.
I'm leaning more towards romantic interest woman. I don't think so.
Do we think she was in cahoots with them? The ex-girlfriend?
I don't know if it's the ex-girlfriend.
I'm kidding.
I mean, it could have easily been. It's just, it is a woman. There is a female energy. So
maybe
this is
a mob family and the mom is like head honcho.
Yeah.
Well,
Mama DiMaggio.
Let me just ask, who is the woman?
Yeah.
Who is the woman?
I find this to be a curious twist because... Really, the only thing we know about his romantic life was the one ex-girlfriend.
Exactly.
That they never really talked about. Was he seeing anyone at the time?
Okay, wait. Did DiMaggio spawn have a sister?
So there was a girl reported, but it was reported not. They looked into it. They didn't. Her name was Angela DiMaggio. She actually called the police. one of the days the police were at the house and said, you need to go check this area of the desert for Steven's body.
Okay.
And they go out and they look, and he's not there. But it turns out they look into this girl but never find any record of her or her name or anything. So we thought it was most likely just to change the name.
Okay. Yeah. So the cards here are the Six of Wands, fast-moving energy, which probably indicates that whatever happened happened rather quickly. Brother, loving woman. So that's why I was asking about the sister, because loving woman, again, indicates a romantic connection and not just a, like, I'm going to screw this guy over. And then we have the Seven of Pentacles, which is usually, like, an apprentice card. So, like, someone who is still learning the ropes, so to speak. Mm. So, I can't fully speak to this woman, but I would say, I don't think that she was, I think she was interested in him, in Steven. I think that they did have a connection and he was pursuing her.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a possibility that she has some guilt over that. But I also feel like she was kind of a pawn in this game, and that's probably where that phone call came from. So, like, who she is, I don't fucking know. But, yeah, so I kind of feel like this was, like, a...
Maybe she was set to kind of lure him, or...
Yeah, but I think she actually really did have feelings for him. Either that, or, like... Either that or the ghost of Steven is like, no, she fucking loved me. but
you got it all wrong, bruv.
Yeah, you're not getting it right. She loved me. No, but the feeling in the cards is like this feels like a romantic connection. So how scandalous. Huh. I'm here for this. I'm thriving.
We never thought of the possibility of there being a lady involved. I mean, the only mention of that is obviously his mother, whom he has a very, very close relationship
with.
And
the call.
And then, yeah, well, then, of course, that random call, but then the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend, him having or having lunch with her family. Like, outside of that, there was nothing ever presented, at least that I'm aware of. I know there's still people diving, like, deep into this, like, hard, trying to, like, piece things together.
Well, hello, deep divers. If you pick up if you find anything, actual information, you know?
Especially I'm anything curious. That, like, they're like, oh, yeah, we did find some girl. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
The call is interesting. We sort of, like, glossed over it on the episode. But, like, what... You have to assume that the voice was feminine.
Right.
Right? That... A man wouldn't give the name Angela DiMaggio unless... No. So, like...
Well, it could be an Angela man. Angela,
that's what
Angelo.
I was
going to
say, but that's more Angelo. But, like, let's assume this is a woman who called.
Mm-hmm.
What woman would fit into the information that could even feel guilty enough to make the call?
See, that's a good question. Like, to me, that's really weird. Again, I never had any thoughts of a girl involvement in any of this.
Surprise, yeah, surprise. I mean, surprise.
Maybe those surprise. Maybe those long drives weren't religious sojourns. Maybe so I'm going to go into screenwriting mode here for a second.
Do it.
So maybe what was going on was he was running jobs for the landlord. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and that's work what these drives debt. Were. Maybe Bitch. Through, maybe through right through working these jobs, doing these drives. Maybe he meets a younger sister of Mark DiMaggio.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then maybe on this day, shit goes sideways for whatever reason. Maybe the brother finds out that he's been seeing his sister. Maybe. Something more business related.
Maybe he goes to visit her before his job interview. He's going to, like, maybe because he knows the family's moving or something, right? Mm-hmm. And she, like, so he goes to, like, see, you know, whatever. Or, like, just be like, hey, babe, I'm going to job interview, and, you know, whatever. Pep talk him a little bit. Whatever. But, yeah. Huh.
Yeah. So I don't, I mean, we can ask that. I need a more, like,
Yeah, we something more it. Specific.
Yeah. Yeah. But I will say that from pretty much the first card pull, there has been a feminine right. energy yeah. at play. So yeah.
that's what's making me think. And the call mm-hmm. to me, I think I don't think someone makes that call without good reason.
Right.
I think.
Yeah.
If he was involved with, you know, a relative of Mark, and something happened, and she's in a position where she can't turn her brother in for what happened. He's her brother, but she feels bad about what happened, and she wants, you know, she wants them to find his body.
But why tell? So
maybe, there's still loyalty.
Why tell them to look in an area where there was nothing?
Well they might maybe, not have looked in the right area if it's the desert.
She even, told like, specifically it was Americana and it was this specific area.
Yeah,
it was right outside of the housing addition in this like kind of like desert area.
How so big here's my was answer that area, that. Though?
I don't yeah. really know for sure.
So here's my answer for that. I think what if something happened in this scenario? The brother kills Steven, right? A conversation happens later between the brother and sister where the brother tells her air quotes where he is.
Yeah,
but doesn't actually give her the correct information.
Uh huh.
Right. And then that's where she genuinely thinks he is when she makes the call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and even if she gave him the right area, like, we don't know how, like, well, I don't know how long and how hard they searched for. And if this was a large area, like,
yeah,
you hear stories like that all the time where the body was there the entire time. It just wasn't. Mm-hmm. Found so
yeah.
There were numerous search occasions. Even in 2015, they had like there was like a new theory that had surfaced. I don't remember exactly what it was, so they reopened and
because of it.
Yeah,
I fucking it's 2024, and you were like even in 2015, and my fucking brain was like, oh, so last year? No, what?
That was almost 10 years ago.
What is age? No, I reject this. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So, like, there's a lot of unknowns there, but I would say with confidence, but also unofficially, Steven's dead. Landlord and DiMaggio Spawn possibly working together, but definitely the female connection is... I think that's the key.
There's got to be a daughter.
If somebody could figure out who she is or like what role she played in this, it did feel like a genuine connection, a genuine love to me.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, like even Mormons who are on the wrong side of the track, okay. Most of them are fucking dummies, all right? They're like, you know, even when they're like doing things that they shouldn't, they're still like blindly trusting because that is how we were raised to be.
Right.
We were not raised.
There's a naivety.
Yes, we were not raised to think for ourselves. We were raised to believe the best in everybody, even criminals. So
there are, yeah, I mean, I recently listened to an interview with, man, I forget her name, but she was the granddaughter of the guy who ran the Westboro Baptist Church.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she escaped that cult.
Yep.
And she talked at length about how difficult it is when you escape a cult to there's a big period when you first get out into the real world where you're just so naive and blindly trusting of every, like, it takes you a long time to figure out that the world doesn't work that way.
Yep.
You know, that, like, people will fuck you over if they get a chance. That, like, you can't just trust what everyone says.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, that's how they're raised. And, you know, we've definitely talked many times, Carly and I, about the fact that Mormonism definitely, by almost every standard, qualifies as a cult.
Oh, yeah. No, it is. Yeah. I mean, most Mormons, even myself included, like, I will say Mormonism is a cult, and I will, like, inwardly cringe because...
Yeah.
That is how I was raised, and I don't want to say I was raised in a cult, but yeah, if you look at it from a psychological lens, Mormonism is a cult. It fits all of the checkpoints, and you are bred and raised to not think for yourself. You are raised to trust what other people are telling you, even if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. See, this is why I think so strongly that Steven got actually involved with the landlord and or DiMaggio in like in these criminal enterprises. I think it would have been really easy for them to draw him into that, especially when he's down on his luck. He's lost his job. He's not able to make ends meet.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
well, the other thing to consider there is that Mormons, like pyramid schemes, Mormons basically didn't invent pyramid schemes, but like most of the MLM company typical pyramid schemes that we have in today's society are based out of Utah because Mormons are very susceptible to it. It's like, there's a class of Mormons who are the ones that are creating this. This is a la Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism. And then you have the rest of them who really buy into the idea that if they just sell these butter soft leggings or this lipstick that won't come off, it'll actually solve all their problems and they can have this luxurious lifestyle that they've always dreamed of. So it would not have been all that difficult to convince someone like that who is desperate for money that, hey, listen, we have this great business opportunity. And that's really all it would have taken. And I don't know, Stephen. I've been enjoying not listening to the episodes until after we do these just to, for my own funsies. So I don't actually know this case. I don't know what he was like, but I do know Mormons. So I would say that it wouldn't have taken much more than that. Like Mormons, a lot of Mormons are salesmen. So having someone pitch you like that genuinely would make sense. Like there is, how old was Stephen?
He was in his 30s, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he'd been on missionary.
Okay, that like, happens. Mormon boys go on their missions when they're 18.
He was 30 at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he so 30. He would have been a return missionary. He should have, he would have been expected to have a well-established job. So if he wasn't and he was feeling pretty desperate, he would have jumped. If someone was like, I have this great business opportunity, it's going to take some legwork, but if we can, if we put in the hours, if we make the effort, then it's going to pay off tenfold or whatever. It would have been an easy sell just from knowing Mormons. And whoever this girl is, based on the way that I felt when I was pulling the cards, I would say that she has a lot of regret. I still do think that this was an actual connection of sorts. Mm-hmm. And it felt more like puppy love to me than like maybe like a lasting partnership. But regardless, I think if somebody could figure that connection out, then maybe there would be one step closer to figuring out the hows and whys.
Yeah.
Internet sleuths. Get on it, but also leave me alone, please. No doubt. Thank you.
Like you said, you don't know Stephen, but you know Mormons. But from what I know about Stephen, if I asked you to write a character that was a completely stereotypical 30-year-old Mormon man living in Utah, you would write Stephen Kocher.
A dime a dozen. Yeah,
he was like ultimate nice guy. Like. Went on mission.
Pink polo shirt, probably.
Yes, yep. Exactly that kind of guy. Yep.
Blonde hair, bright smile.
Yes. Yes. You just described him perfectly. Yeah.
Yeah. I know Mormons, so that's my area of expertise. Yeah.
Like he went to college at
BYU.
What's it called? Yep. He went to Brigham Young for college. It's like the ideal to Mormons roadmap he was on his whole life until this job loss, this unexpected downturn.
So if he was like pretty straight and narrow, he wasn't like a sketchy guy until all this happened. Like he wasn't involved in drugs, he wasn't drinking, so he was a pretty clean cut Mormon. Then he wouldn't have thought twice about this. He would have thought he looked into some opportunity. Or he probably prayed about it and was like, I can't believe that all of this is falling into my lap. My prayers are answered, and would not have thought. If he had any doubts, he probably would have pushed them aside. The inclination there would be to trust and not to question.
That idea makes the concept of it all going pear-shaped for him so much more tragic.
Yeah, no, it really does.
The fact that he would have just been so optimistic about it and so excited that like he had lucked into all this, and then
right,
yeah,
yeah. Well, and that actually,
poor Steven Kocher.
Poor Steven. Yeah. Well, it actually makes the idea of him having dinner with his ex girlfriend's parents even more likely, or lunch or whatever it was, even more likely to me, because I don't know. Like I said, I didn't listen to the story beforehand, but I was assuming that he was already kind of. I don't know. I just assumed he was into some shady shit. I didn't realize he was Mormon until after that. So I was already like, oh, well, he must be on drugs or something. No, if he really was a clean cut Mormon boy, it would have been entirely natural for him to just drop by and be like, hey, I was in the neighborhood. How are y'all doing? Is, I don't know, Stacy home? Can, you know, I just wanted to say hi, check in, see how you're all doing. And yeah, that wouldn't be weird to me.
And for the parents to just be like, well, we're about to sit down for lunch. Why don't you join us?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, like, yeah. That it's totally normal to me. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Oh, poor Steven. I feel kind of bad for him.
Me too.
Well, maybe
I
also,
yeah. I mean, I feel bad that I had the wrong perception of him at first, too, because I just went in being like, this piece of shit. Sorry, Steven.
Yeah, honestly, by all accounts, he seemed to be like a super nice guy.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Everybody loved him.
Yeah,
and I know, like, when something like this happens, particularly in, it's really everybody, but particularly in a community as tight knit as Mormons are, as Mormon communities are, you're not gonna get like a whole lot of truth telling from people after the fact. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to be like, well, actually, he was kind of a dirtbag.
Oh, definitely you know? Not. Like, yeah.
No, you're going to hear the nicest version of him from anybody you ask. But by all accounts, he seemed like a really nice guy. And he was never in any kind of trouble before this. Like, yeah. It is really sad. It's very sad.
Yeah, that is sad. Yeah, so I think... Yeah, and if... I hesitate because, again, this is new, so don't take this as factual. Take this as entertainment. But I would say that the girl was probably younger, like, I don't know, early 20s maybe. Still a little...
Also pretty typical in with Mormons, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was 18 and I dated a 28-year-old for a little while. So, like...
Yeah.
Like, collective gasp. Like, who the fuck let me do that? I didn't marry that guy, luckily. But, yeah, so I would think that she was I would think she was a little bit younger too, and because again the feeling was puppy love. It wasn't like a profound adult relationship. It was like two beings. Like, wow, I can't believe you're real. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, and like teenage love.
Like teenage love, which is also very typical for Mormons. Mormons meet, they fall in love very fast. They get married very fast. So like.
But the age thing happens a lot because the men go off on mission, right? And then when they come back, the women who are still young, like 18, 19, 20, they typically are encouraged to go for the men who have already been out on mission and all that, right?
Yeah. Mormon girls are encouraged to marry return missionaries. So if, like, when I was dating... Or when I was single, which wasn't a super long time, it was return missionaries because you don't want to get involved with someone who's going to be gone for 2 years. So it's always going to be somebody older and more experienced than you. And I don't know if the DiMaggios were Mormon or not, but like for him, it wouldn't be that unusual to date someone younger.
The idea is to have your daughter go for a guy who's established, right? Like you said, at 30, he would have been expected to have an established career and, you know, and have his shit together.
Yeah.
So the idea is that you'd encourage your daughter to go for a man like that who's already set up.
Yeah. Well, Mormon women are not, like, they're not necessarily encouraged to get an education or to work outside of the home.
Right.
It's like you're praised if you have a degree and if you have a job, but you're almost looked down on if you have a job and you are an active Mormon woman, because that means that you're taking time away from your children and your spouse to
sort of like women everywhere.
Yes, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Women everywhere, but like with a dial it up a bit. It's like the whole, like the trad wife thing that was trending on TikTok for a while. Like, can't roll my eyes hard enough. That was my entire life. No, thank you.
Yeah.
Been there, done that. Yeah. So, but yeah, that would be my, I think that would be the, if this was going to get solved.
I think it'd be through the woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless they like found his body, but yeah, I would think through the woman.
That's interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean it provides a whole different perspective, like to go, because I was dead set on our what we had decided with Brett and Mark being in cahoots, and it'd just be like something they lured him into.
And then I rolled up with my cards and was like, "Surprise, bitches! There's a woman."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Angela DiMaggio. She lives.
Well, yeah. Who is she? We don't know. Is she real? Right. We don't know. Exactly. But somewhere along the line, there was a woman that he was very into, and she was into him.
Maybe Mark just threw on a wig and... Oh, hey, Steven.
Steven.
Honestly, the big question for me, and I'm going to be like doing a deep dive after we finish here.
I can't resist. I've already been watching YouTube videos on people that have been still deep diving this.
I want to know if Mark DiMaggio has a sister.
I mean,
that's what I want to know.
Yeah, that's what we're going to have to figure out.
Because if he had a sister, especially one that lived at the house, that's
sleuth.
That's big. Big if true. You
know, right.
Sleuthing. Let me know, because I'm invested. I want to know who this woman is. I hope she's happy.
Absolutely.
You know?
And if listeners, again, if you know any more details, you've been down this rabbit hole, or have friends or family, or maybe you are Angela DiMaggio.
Yeah.
You just reach out. You can do it anonymously. Tell us your name, and then we won't... Oh, wait. Hang on. Let's back up. We will treat you anonymously. We won't provide any details. Just give us a confirmation.
No, I want a fucking fireside chat with Angela DiMaggio. We'll do one of the crazy voice changer things.
We'll change your name.
Yeah.
We'll change. Obviously, it's not Angela DiMaggio. So,
yeah.
Maybe it's Mary Beth show, DiMaggio. Though.
Yeah.
Mary Beth.
For sure.
No,
Mary Beth DiMaggio.
Also, I'm kind of curious if the DiMaggios were a Mormon family.
I don't know.
I mean, that would be good to know.
It's not really a Mormon name, but that doesn't mean that they didn't convert somewhere along the line. Because, again, historically speaking, Mormons send missionaries all over the fucking world. So the name doesn't necessarily mean anything.
And they were living in the suburbs of Vegas.
Right.
There's so a lot of Mormons there.
It was a retirement community.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't have really been kids there in the first place.
Yeah. The son was living in the guest house.
Right.
It was like a garage conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Guest house in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I have to imagine a city as large as Vegas has a pretty significant Mormon population, especially that close to Utah, which is like the epicenter.
Vegas actually, Missouri. Yeah, Vegas actually does have, and Idaho. Vegas has a very large Mormon population, actually. So
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how and why that ended up. The City of Sin, why are there so many Mormons there?
It's a great place for converting people, right?
You know, you find people who are rock bottom and you say, "Hey, I have what you need." You got what I need. Yeah, there are lots of Mormons there, so
yeah, could be. Mm-hmm. Lots of unanswered questions still, but I think
there are.
I like where this went, because it was completely unexpected.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I particularly like it because it went in an unexpected direction, but in a way that doesn't rule out the theory that we already were working with.
Yeah.
It does not.
You know what I mean?
It seems like it goes along with it to me.
Yeah.
Like, it seems like there's maybe a few missing pieces to that puzzle, but it does seem like if this was a family unit, it feels like it's all connected in some way, shape, or form. I just don't know what that connection is.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. I just hope they find the body.
Right.
Oh, I hope.
That bums me out so much.
I mean, it's been 15 years.
I know. Crazier things have happened.
True.
I've seen some bodies be found, like cold cases where they're never prosecuted because they're avoiding nobody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
no body homicide case, and they find it like 25, 30 years later. Find the body like in somebody's walls.
Yeah.
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 Well, mm-hmm. And were there any mine shafts in that area? I was going to mention
almost
that.
Almost certainly.
I was going to mention that desert, earlier, right? But there's that one case. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was also Mormon, and so was his wife. But the podcast is called Cold. That case is fascinating, but she's probably in a mine somewhere. And when you guys were talking about where she was called, where, like, when Angela called the police and was like, he's here, my first thought was, oh, he's in a mine. So, you know.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, Vegas is surrounded by old abandoned mines on all sides. So
yeah, well, it would be very hard to, you know. And again, I've never been there.
There's a reason why people dispose of bodies in the desert, and that's because it's really fucking hard to search.
Yeah.
It's really hard, like harder than swamps to search, because it's just all so uniform.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to keep track of what's been searched and what hasn't.
All right.
All right, I think that's going to wrap up this week's episode of Camp Divination, The Disappearance of Stephen Kocher.